This is the Last Week in English podcast, summer semester 2019, week 6, with me, Mark Jacob, coming to you from the TU Berg Academy Freiburg. Today's guest is from the USA, but she spent the first years of her life in Asia. She's the great-great-granddaughter of the second-to-last King of Vietnam, but was born in a refugee camp. She's currently studying here in Freiburg for a Master's in International Business in Developing and Emerging Markets and has kindly agreed to talk to us today. So, welcome, Sylvie Lay.
Hi.
Before we talk about international business and what you're doing here in Freiburg now, could you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me here. I was born, like you mentioned, in a refugee camp in the Philippines.
Yeah.
My family is Vietnamese by origin. My father has mixed cultural identity, so I kind of call myself a global citizen, being that I was raised in a Vietnamese household, but then moved over to the United States, so I had to assimilate really quickly there. And if you ask me what I identify as, I'd say I'm pretty American. The great thing though is that I am a Vietnamese American, so I have that dual identity a little bit. I had most of my formal education in the US, so from about second grade onwards, I was in grade school there. I finished high school and then ended up going to college at William & Mary, where I majored in psychology and marketing. I wanted to get into advertising, so after graduating, I did a couple of workshops in that arena and found that it wasn't for me, and eventually decided that I wanted to get into communications, specifically in the sustainability sector, which is what brought me here to Germany and to this specific program.
Mm-hmm, okay. And that's quite a lot in a very short period of time. And maybe we can pick out a few details there. Cause you mentioned that you were born in the Philippines. So how was it that you came to be born in the Philippines?
So the Vietnam War displaced a lot of people and made them, I guess we're getting into the political realm, but it made a lot of people not want to be in Vietnam anymore. And there was this mass exodus of people called the Boat People. And my mother was one of the people who sought to escape the country to find a better future for her and her children. So she scraped together some money from family members and friends and got on this little dinghy of a boat, a fishing boat really, and escaped to the Philippines, which was illegal at the time. She landed there, and there was a refugee camp set up, I think, by the United Nations in several areas, like in several countries around Vietnam. I think Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, Philippines, Malaysia, I think also. But we ended up in the Philippines, and for 2 years, she was trying to get paperwork for her and my older sister to go to the United States. That didn't work, but what she did get was me. I'm going to say that's a way better prize. Just kidding, of course. But yeah, then we lived there for another 6 years, essentially. And unfortunately, the camp lost its funding, so it closed down. And that's when we had to go back to Vietnam, which was unfortunately where my mom escaped from. But luckily, after 2.5-3 years of trying, we actually did get our paperwork to go to the United States. So we went as a family to the US. It was a really cool experience. Mm-hmm.
And did your family know anyone there in the US?
Yes, my dad had a couple of family members already in the US. So a couple of them were located in the state of Florida, and then the other bunch were located in Virginia. So we started in Florida, and then the relatives in Virginia said to us, come up to Virginia, you can live with us for a little bit, get you on your feet, and we'll take care of each other. So that's how I ended up in Northern Virginia. Actually, funny story is eventually my my aunt from my mother's side emigrated here to the US too, also in Northern Virginia. So we're like 20 people strong. And that's without the second generation kids that we're counting there. So we're a big crew up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you have any memories of arriving in the States? Or?
Yes, great question. One of my favorite memories of coming to the US is taking a bath for the first time. And that sounds super silly, but where I was from in the refugee camp and then in Vietnam, we didn't have bathtubs. We barely had showers, you know, kind of just poured water on ourselves. But I always watched it in movies and I always thought it was so cool that people could luxuriate in these tubs. So in what I felt to be a Ritz-Carlton suite, a five-star hotel experience, my mom drew me a bath and I hopped in and she's like, don't splash too much water. Of course, 5 minutes later, half of the bathtub water was on the floor, but it was a really nice experience.
And what, so that was your first experience of the American way. And did you have any other?
Yes. And then the second most prominent memory in my mind about coming to America is when I landed in the airport, one of my caseworkers had a Barbie doll with me, and I just remember holding it and being so enamored with this beautiful doll representing a new life in America. She's super pretty and new and shiny, and I hadn't had anything like that. So it was kind of a forecast of my life in the US, if you will.
And how was school there in the US?
Honestly, school for the first couple of months, I would even say years, were a little bit hard because of that assimilation, that culture shock. I didn't have any friends. I didn't speak the language. That was a little bit hard. I had some education. I had some lessons in English before, but nothing super formal and not enough to where I was able to communicate very easily with people. And coming over in the early 2000s or late 1990s, there wasn't a lot of diversity just yet. I think I was just on the cusp of that, so it was hard to be different. It was hard to not be able to speak the language. But then I really, really focused on learning the language. My mom also helped me. She already spoke it. And I became an honors English student, and now English has surpassed Vietnamese by leagues as my native language. Yes.
Yeah, so you speak Vietnamese as well then?
Yes, I speak Vietnamese as well. I always joke that I have the vocabulary of a 9-year-old because that's when I stopped learning Vietnamese. So any usage of the language is informal and with my family. So if I were to give a presentation in Vietnamese or any kind of professional setting, it would be very awful and quite a train wreck to see.
And after school, you studied at a very traditional college.
Yes, right. William and Mary, established in 1693, which right. I hear is older than Freiberg.
It's older than Freiberg, it is. Yeah. And how was it there then at this traditional college?
It was really nice. I actually compare it to Freiberg a lot because we're both set in small towns, small old towns with a lot of history. So William and Mary was chartered by one of the kings and numerous kings and queens of England in, like I said, 1693. It's the second oldest college in the United States after Harvard, but we do have the oldest functioning college building, which we love to tout whenever possible. Take that, Harvard. But so going there is really fun because you are in this college town, this liberal arts college town with lots of young modern kids, and then you go across the street and it's Colonial Williamsburg. So you have people dressed up in the colonial gear, like spinning wool and stuff like that. And as a student, you can get into there for free. So I always grab an ice cream cone from the ice cream parlor and then walk around and watch the colonial people split wood or something. It was a nice dichotomy.
So it's like an outdoor museum.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And they try to keep it as close to historical. They keep it as historically accurate as possible. Mm. Yeah. Okay.
And what did you study there?
I studied psychology and marketing. I was really interested in psychology, and I figured marketing was a good way to apply, practically apply psychological knowledge. Psychology, I think, is the understanding of how people perceive messages. And then I think marketing is the tailoring of those messages. So they're kind of the two opposite sides of one coin.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's it like to study at an American college? Is it very different to studying in Europe?
Great question. I think the biggest difference would be the course structure. In the US, we have projects, midterms, and final grade, and a final exam or a final project. Whereas in a lot of classes here, in at least Freiburg, I can't speak for the other ones, it's you go to class and then you have a final exam. If you pass it, then you pass the class. So that was a little bit surprising for me at the start, but I think they're pretty similar, especially since I'm an English speaking program. So I think it's kind of cheating. If I was in a German class, I feel like I might have a lot more difficulty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, when you graduated then from the College of William and Mary, what did you do next?
After graduating, I cried. Just kidding. After graduating, I started at a workshop at a ad agency in Virginia. It's called the Martin Ad Agency. Some of their famous clients had included Walmart, Mercedes, I think, and the big one, Geico. You know, there's this little green gecko, if anybody is familiar with pop culture. And also the term 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance. It's now part of the pop culture vernacular in the United States. So when advertisement gets ingrained into pop culture like that, that's when, as a marketer, you know you did a good job. So it just goes to say they're a really cool company. I started working there at a workshop, and I got to see how the sausage is made, if you will. It's an idiom meaning how things get done, the behind the scenes work of getting these commercials or advertisements from inception to production. And it was really interesting, but you know, at the end of the day, at the end of the workshop, I was like, I'm not sure if this is for me. It's very exciting, but there was something missing. So I did some soul searching, some navel gazing, basically, when you put your head down and like think really hard about what you want. And after some meandering, I figured out that I wanted to get into something that would give back to the world. I wanted to do something to make the world a better place. And that's how I found sustainability. Now, if you recall earlier, I was doing psychology and marketing, and one of the things that interested me the most was the communication aspect. So I figured, why not try to find a path that would put these two together? So that's how I converged upon sustainability communication, which is what I'm trying to strive after now.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find the course here?
Oh, even better question. So this path here has also been kind of crazy also. I worked at the Nature Conservancy in 2016, and I had anticipated getting another job, so I stopped working. I resigned from the job, and I knew I had a couple weeks until Christmas, so I was like, okay, I gotta travel or do something cool, because I had never traveled internationally by myself before. So I booked this trip, this volunteering program in Bali to teach English for 3 weeks. Just by myself, you know, with my luggage bag. And I got there, and it was such a wonderful experience. I met so many kind-hearted people, like-minded people also. And most notably, I met my boyfriend there too. He was in the program. It was a really crazy story. It was a meet cute, I think is what it's called in romantic comedies, when you know, the two main characters didn't really like each other at the beginning. We did not like each other, but we were certainly not interested. But as fate would have it, somebody pushed me. We were at a bar, so alcohol was involved, but somebody pushed me really hard into him, and he was holding a beer bottle, so the beer bottle conked me on my head, and then it conked him on his teeth, and I think there's still a little, like, broken mark from it. I'm like, you can't forget me now. So from that, we kind of had to go aside into a quiet place and assess our injuries, and then from there, we started talking. Anyway, so as fate would have it, he's German, and he knew I was, one, looking for a job, and two, looking for a master's program to get into. So, you know, after maybe at least 6 months or almost a year of dating, he's like, why don't you look at Germany? You know, it's free schooling here. I had been complaining about how expensive all the graduate programs are in the United States, and he mentioned that. I was very surprised and also very cynical. I'm like, yeah, I know it's free for you guys, but I'm a foreigner. There's no possible way it's free for me. And he's like, but doch. So I started looking that up, and yeah, I was totally surprised, really shocked, and happily so. And I applied to a couple of schools and found that this was the best fit for me in Freiburg. So here I am.
What were your first impressions of Freiburg when you came here?
My first impressions of Freiburg, I really liked it. I think it reminded me of Colonial Williamsburg, because there's still that historical sense where a little, I think the city has made an effort to kind of free some historical points, to keep that history still alive within the city. So when I first walked around, I was like, wow, this is the quintessential European town that I've always thought about or seen in the movies. So I still really like walking around town.
And do you have any favorite places in Freiburg?
Oh, gosh. You know, I really like the Altstadt. And I honestly haven't been to many other places. I just walk around there. The Kartoffelhaus is a nice favorite of mine. I really like food, so pretty much anywhere that has good food, I just gravitate towards.
And how do you communicate here? And I mean, do you use English
language,
or do you sign language? Have you learned any German?
Yes. So I took a really nice A1.1 semester. I passed the class. My teacher was super nice, very hard on me. Just kidding. Yes, anyway. Yeah, I'm attempting to learn German right now. I think what I do in communicating to strangers is a term that I call Deutschlish, mm-hmm. where I try as much as I can in German, but then I will compensate with some English word and over-the-top gestures to make up for my lack of vocabulary and grammar in German. Fortunately, many Germans, especially here, speak some, if not perfect, English. So they see me acting very foolishly, and they're like, calm down, I can speak English. And I'm like, oh, goodness, thank God. So then we will continue in German. There's actually quite a good Vietnamese community around here, too. So then mm-hmm. I try to also speak with them in Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. The thing is, they speak a different dialect than I do, and then my family at home, so sometimes they don't understand me and vice versa. But also, like I said, because my vocabulary is not very extensive, and I think they're just surprised, because I don't think I have strong Vietnamese features, so a lot of people are surprised when I start speaking it.
Okay, yeah, there are a lot of Vietnamese in Freiburg. I think a number of them studied at the university here.
Okay.
Eden, yeah.
Yeah. I know of one other Vietnamese student, and she's really nice too. But she speaks English also, so I wuss out and I always talk to her in English. I'll start in Vietnamese, but as soon as I can't think of the word, I'll just switch over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now your course here then is, I mean, it's called International business. So that means there must be students from all over the world there. I mean, what sort of people have you met?
Yes, I love this program because it's such an international program, very, very purely. There we have students from Pakistan, India, Singapore, Paris, Serbia, Russia, Vietnam. Also, it's just such a great mix of people. Oh, and a lot of people from China also. I really like interacting with them. I really like being able to learn about new cultures and see the intermingling of languages. It's really funny. We just walk around this mishmash of different cultures and different racial profiles. It's like, wow, this is really cool that we're all gathered here in this kind of random city in Germany and just hanging out and having a really good time.
And as part of this course, then you have the chance, or you have to maybe
Yes.
spend a semester somewhere else in another
Yes.
country. What are your plans for that?
So I am going to go to Paris. It's actually a city right outside of Paris. It's UPEC University something something Côté. That was my French accent or an attempt at it. Sorry, friends. Yes, so I'm going to go there for 1 semester. It's a requirement for this international MBA program. And I thought that was hilarious because on one hand, I really respect and I think it's such a great idea because nowadays globalization is so prevalent. Everybody needs some international experience. But the funny thing is, I'm already an international, of course, so it's like going abroad squared for me. Yeah. But yes, I'm going to go there this fall and I'll do 1 semester there. Maybe 2 semesters. I haven't quite decided yet, but 1 or 2 semesters there in Paris, and then I'll have to write a thesis. And then after that, I'll defend it and I'll be finished with my MBA. Yeah.
Okay. And is it too early to talk about plans for the future?
It's never too early to talk, but always, always also too early. It's good to think about, certainly. So, as far as whether or not I'll go back to the US or stay in Germany, that's definitely up in the air because it depends on what kind of job opportunities or what kind of jobs I could get hired for. I think it would be very interesting to start working here in Germany. That said, I do really miss my family also, so there's a pull going back for sure also. Yeah.
And what sort of job could you imagine doing in Germany, or what sort of organization could you imagine working for?
I think there's a lot of different avenues that I would be very interested and excited to go down. Whenever I pitch this idea to myself in my head, kind of a vision board of where I want to go, I always say something like the sustainability division of Coca-Cola. So a private firm, but also some people trying to do good or like have initiatives that do good for the world. The other path I can see myself going down is some sort of NGO where I would try to work as a liaison for the corporate sector to try to get something done and sustainability wise. So lots of avenues I can go down, and I was hoping that in keeping my options open and keeping my mind open, it would allow me more opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go anywhere in the world, I'm thinking. I mean, your origins are in Asia, and then your home is the US, and now you're in Europe. Yeah, is there anywhere in the world that you could imagine going and working in that maybe you
Yeah.
haven't been yet?
Antarctica, I really want
Antarctica, okay.
to go. Yes, all the penguins, right? Did you file this report? There's 2 continents I haven't been to, or I guess 3 if you count Antarctica. But I haven't been to South America and I haven't been to Africa. So I'm hoping to do some sort of project in a developing community in Africa as a part of my master's work. That's still not decided up yet. Still not decided yet, but I'd really be interested in doing that. And then Mark, my boyfriend, is actually going to Brazil to study. So he's doing a semester abroad also. Hopefully I'll get to visit him. Also not sure about that, but that would be super fun. As far as where I could see myself, you're absolutely right. We could end up anywhere. I think it's just wherever the wind takes us, wherever the job market takes us, really. Yeah.
At the beginning, I mentioned in the introduction that you're the great-great-granddaughter of a Vietnamese king.
Yes.
And I've been waiting to ask you about that. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I will give you a brief synopsis of my family history / the Vietnamese history. So Vietnam was a monarchy, an empire of sorts, and there are different dynasties, different generations of king. And then one of the last ones, the second to last one, was named Thanh Thai. And I think he was forced to abdicate his throne by French colonizers because they wanted to put his six-year-old son on the throne as kind of like a puppet king, so that, you know, the country and the country people would be more easily controlled. So he abdicated and he was exiled to this really nice seaside mansion in Vietnam, and his son was put on the throne. And yeah, so lots of drama regarding that. And then of course we knew the Vietnam War happened, so communism is now the new form of government, so that the royal family ceased to exist, and all their lands and titles and wealth, I think, were distributed throughout the government. So yes, my mom's dad's mother was a princess, and she was the daughter of the second to last king. So that's the, in a nutshell, that's how I'm kind of related to royalty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you heard any stories about that from your, did your mother tell you any stories about, well, that she heard from her grandmother?
Probably. Most of it was just kind of bickering, I think, between the royals, you know, the royal children.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of silly, but I can imagine it too. I went to Hue, which is the historic capital of Vietnam, in 2017. And I walked around. They're doing a lot of renovations on it. It's really cool. If you get to go, definitely take the chance. But I imagined being in there as one of the descendants of a royal, and imagining that you're not really allowed to go past these gates. I mean, the place is huge. It runs on and on and on. But, you know, after a couple of months, I'm sure you get bored of it. You know, you can only go
so. A bit like a prisoner.
Exactly. So, on one hand, I'm like, oh man, I could have been a princess, or like I could have been some aristocrat. But on the other hand, I am really appreciative of my freedom and where I am right now in my life.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how was it in general going back to Vietnam?
Oh God, it was such a culture shock. If you had thrown me there by myself without any family members or anything, I would be totally lost. I would never see myself again. But I love the food. Oh my goodness. It was so nice. That's one of the things I miss most, actually, about home, and then also about Vietnam, just the availability of food and the diversity of all the food that you have there, too. I think Freiburg is many things, but having a diverse and available food selection, it is not. It's one of the things that I had to get used to when I came here, is the stores close at 8 and they stay closed. Because in the US, you can get food, or you can go shopping at like 3 a.m. if you wanted to. You know, we have 24-hour department stores that are open, so you can go shopping at any time of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were some culture shocks here.
Yes, for sure.
And in Vietnam then, you said there was, it was a big shock there. Could you think of any examples of culture shocks?
Well, I guess the biggest one is the... Well, I don't really want to talk about toilets, that's it. Yes, one of the most contentious moment, because I was traveling with Mark, is I said, now you have to pay before anybody else does, because that's just, I don't know what it is, but it's like a battle, really. When the bill comes, you just have to fight for it, like, really with your life. And it seems nice, and it's like, no, I want to take care of you, but it gets, like, really ugly. People use diversion tactics. They're like, underhanded methods about paying for the bill ahead of time. But so anyway, I told Mark about it, and he's very German. He's like, well, I don't know why I'm doing this, but okay, since you told me to. But he learned from the first time that insisting is not enough, so he got smart. Before we even had the first course, what he did was he took the credit, his travel credit card, and he gave it to one of the waiters, and he's like, put everything on this credit card. And so I was like very proud of him. I was like, hey, well done, you know, now you're ahead of the game. But then the check comes, and my cousin who was eating with us told the guy, like, give the credit card back, and we're totally shocked. We didn't realize that that was even an option, because we beat them to it, but they're like, no, give it back, because I guess they knew that my cousin, that maybe he already knew my cousin, or my cousin had told him ahead, don't let us pay or something like that. But so I think that's a culture shock, because if you were doing it here in Germany, the other party would be like, okay, go ahead, let's get another round of beer. You know, and same thing in the U.S. also. If I insisted, my friends would be like, cool, thanks. You know, there would be no pushing back and forth and back and forth, which is, I think, a huge thing that Asian culture does. You kind of push back and fight over the bill. Yeah.
That's the great thing about traveling, going to other places and experiencing other cultures. Then you find out things that you didn't even know existed. Sort
absolutely.
Of thing, behaviors that you've never heard about.
Yeah.
And what about in Germany, apart from the shops closing early, were there any other differences you noticed?
I think one of the differences that I did notice that I just spoke about recently with my friends is that when you're chewing your beer, you have to maintain eye contact. And I had never experienced that before, so I'm always like, oh, looking away, like cheering people, but they're like, no, eye contact. So I figured out the reason, or like why you're supposed to, but I didn't know that there was like a history behind it or anything. So that's a little bit, not off-putting, but disconcerting to me when I'm toasting people and they're maintaining like heavy eye contact. I'm like, okay, let's drink now. Divert my eyes really quick, because it's, I don't know, I think maybe it's an American thing where we don't stare too much. Like, we maintain eye contact when we're presenting, but too much eye contact is aggressive, I think, or weird in the US. So,
right, yeah. You're right, it's a balance.
Yeah.
You have to get right. Yeah.
Any other ones? Oh, yes. I think the hugging culture. So I'm quite a huggy person. I hug everybody. And so when I met Mark's family, I went in for a hug, and I think that was very shocking and traumatic for them, because eventually I noticed that, like, you know, it's more of a handshake family. I think they're used to me now, so I still continue my hugs. I try to restrain myself sometimes from hugging too much, but yeah, they're a little more used to my outgoingness and my fondness for hugs, I think.
Yeah. Are they from around here?
They're from Western Germany, mm-hmm. in the Nordrhein-Westphalia
mm-hmm.
region. Yeah, so close to Münster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been to visit them, and you've been to
yes.
that part of Germany as well.
I have been to that part of Germany. It's very nice also. All of Germany is really nice. I love driving around and seeing all the countryside and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The cities are very nice and metropolis. But I think the countryside is really nice too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So any kind of final thoughts that you've got then, or things that you've maybe like you can take away from Freiburg that you've got from here?
Yeah, so other than from my education, which has been quite colorful, I also think one of the things I can take away from Freiburg is to know your roots and then be proud of it. Freiburg was a mining town, and that's something that is still really celebrated in the city. They have this, you guys have this wonderful minerals museum, mm-hmm. which at first thought you're like, oh, what, really? Like a museum for rocks? But then you go in and there's so much history and there's so much information, and there's this really cool exhibit where you can see the rocks at different UV light wavelengths. And it's just so neat to see something that could seem so boring be brought to life. And I think that's something that I would take away from Freiburg, which is be proud of your roots and then find a way to let them shine.
Wow, that is a great message to end on. So thank you very much, Sylvie. Enjoy the rest of your time in Freiburg and in Paris, and wish you all the best.
Thank you.